Welcome to Candidate Conversations, part of Delaware Debates 2018, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Delaware Public Media News Director Tom Byrne. This conversation, taped on location in Newark, focuses on the race for U.S. Senate. And we are joined by the Green Party's Dimitri Theodoropoulos. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Well, first off, we ask everyone, why are you running for U.S. Senate?
I'm running for U.S. Senate because I think in our federal government, we need a bulldog, for lack of a better word, for the American public. Our, you know, federal representatives and senators are far too much in service of the very wealthy and special interest groups than they are for the 99% of us. And we really need somebody to sit down and watch what's going on. And my main goal is campaign finance reform.
What should voters know about your qualifications for the job, perhaps that they don't already know or would think is important for them to know?
I have been an engineer most of my life, which is engineering is somebody who solves problems. Right now, I see a lot of problems in Washington, and I've spent a couple of years researching this and found the root cause of all our problems is this big money funneling into political campaigns. It's a way that special interests can give as much as they want to a candidate and leaves that candidate beholden to them. And I would like to be America's watchdog and kind of keep an eye on them and set up some special rules for Senate and the House of Representatives when dealing with lobbyists.
I want to go into some issue-oriented questions.
Absolutely.
Certainly more than a few pundits and analysts are framing this midterm election as a referendum on President Trump. Do you agree? Why or why not?
I agree, but I also think it's a referendum on our Congress. Senate and House of Representatives, they have a kind of turned away from the American public except during election time. When they're elected, all of a sudden the people that voted for them are kind of forgot and they move on. I believe President Trump's election was based on a shot across the bow from the American public saying, hey, wake up or we're going to remove you guys and put people in that aren't lifetime politicians, people that aren't going to bend to the whims of the lobbyists to truly drain the swamp.
The Mueller investigation and questions about Russian interference in the 2016 election and elections going forward hover over these midterms. To what degree are you concerned about this type of interference in our election cycles, and particularly this one? And if elected, what would you support doing to prevent it in the future?
We have to put checks and balances on foreign interference in our elections. The way to do this is, again, campaign finance reform. This morning I was listening to the news and there was another, you know, Russian attack, and they were able to actually identify who the people were, and it went back to the, you know, Russian military interests. And it was an attack on the Republicans and the conservatives this time. So if we're able to find out who these people are, then we should be, our intelligence agency should be able to block them in some form or another, or at least make it known, if you see this, this is probably who it's from. And things like Facebook, people use that a lot. And when ads pop up on Facebook, people tend to believe these things. People have to start questioning what they're seeing on Facebook. A gentleman yesterday came in the store and told me a very interesting quote. If you don't listen to the news, you're uninformed. If you listen to the news, you're misinformed. So you have to kind of read between the lines and bounce from station to station to station, and you will eventually conglomerate what is actually going on together.
A Pew Research Center poll earlier this summer found that immigration is the top concern among voters heading into these midterms. This issue obviously touches on a number of topics, from the status of the DACA program, separation of families at the border, to the funding of President Trump's border wall, which the president has threatened a government shutdown over. If elected, what approach toward immigration would you seek to pursue in Congress?
I have a little bit of an advantage here. I am the son of two immigrants, Greek father, Swedish mother. Watched both my parents struggle over language problems. My dad worked for DuPont, never could get those big promotions because of the language issue. My mother spent the last few years of her life becoming a U.S. citizen. That was one thing she wanted to do before she passed away. I think people in the DACA program, if you have been here since before you were 16, have gone through school, been a taxpaying citizen in this country, you need and you have the right to be fast-tracked to citizenship here, because there's several teachers, educators that are still part of this, you know, undocumented, so they say they claim, and they've paid their taxes, they've been good citizens, they've helped this country, fast-track them for citizenship. My father got to be a citizen by joining the U.S. Air Force. Mm-hmm. Now, the fact that we're deporting veterans makes me sick to my stomach. These people have raised their hand, sworn to defend the Constitution, and have done so, and many of them in several tours mm-hmm. in the Middle East. As far as I'm concerned, those should be citizens, and we need to make come up with a way or a system to fast-track these people that, you know, should become citizens, because it would be nothing but a benefit to this country for most of them, but especially the veterans that have served for this country and then get deported. That's insanity to me.
Healthcare also high up on the list of voter concerns in this election cycle. Arguments in a Texas case that could strike down the Affordable Care Act as unconstitutional will be heard this fall. If that suit succeeds, though, it would also eliminate popular pieces of the ACA, including protections for people with pre-existing conditions. With that possibility as a backdrop, what do you see as the appropriate path forward when it comes to addressing healthcare in this country?
Other countries, other, you know, first world nations like us can provide healthcare for other citizens. I don't know why America can't come up with a system to do this. We're smart. We're you know, able to do this. We have the resources. Why can't we come up with a system that works? It's, you know, the arguments between the Democrats and the Republicans and blocking each other, and it seems to me that there should be an easy system to come up with. You know, everybody says Medicare for everybody, which I disagree with. I think it should be Medicaid for everybody, because Medicare has some holes in it. Mm-hmm. For instance, they're not allowed to negotiate lower drug prices from Big Pharma. Medicaid is. So is the VA, and therefore they pay the lowest prices. There's also something in Medicare called the donut hole, mm-hmm. where they will kind of cover up to $3,000, and then the Medicare recipient is completely responsible for like $3,000 to $7,000 bills. And, you know, people on fixed income, that can kill them. We can figure out a way to, and almost literally kill them, you know, if they can't afford their medicines. We can figure out a way to provide, you know, healthcare at a reasonable cost for everybody in this nation without making the boys at Big Pharma rich. You know, how much money do you need? You know, these guys at the top are paying themselves huge bonuses and should kind of let it go.
Also want to hit on trade, and specifically President Trump's use of tariffs, which we have seen here in Delaware having a negative impact on soybean and corn farmers. What is your assessment of this use of tariffs, both economically and in terms of foreign policy as a whole?
Okay. I think the first set of tariffs was brilliant. They have, you know, against China's aluminum and steel, which we all know, you know, if anybody wants to do the research online, they actually subsidize their aluminum and steel in order to put other countries out of business. It's a purposely thought thing. They manipulate their currency values in order to be able to ship all this cheap steel and aluminum all over. The tariff for that was great. But I look at it like a two-year-old at the table with spaghetti, and they smash some in their face and everybody laughs and cheers, and they continue to do it. You know, what we have is our president is doing the same thing. Everybody was like, that's great, tariff on China. We know they're manipulating the market. We know they're manipulating their currency. But now you're taxing our allies for things that are necessary. And then yelling about Harley-Davidson moving, you know, having to build things overseas in order to maintain their presence in a market. Otherwise, they'll just be outpriced. You know, nobody's going to buy a $40,000 Harley-Davidson in Europe. It's just not going to happen. And now I think these countries are now fighting back and targeting specific, industries, you know, agriculture, things like that, really, really specifically actually to hurt Donald Trump's base. And it's this tit for tat, you know, like a couple of kids playing in a schoolyard. It's not the way to look at it. The steel and aluminum on China, I agree with, because we know they fix their markets. The rest of the stuff, I mean, steel and aluminum against Canada, Canada's our best friend in the world. We should, you know, we should have totally open free borders with them. You know, people argue that with the whole milk thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the milk tariff that
right.
they have. And it's – I just think the one was a great idea. Continuing to do this is really going to hurt us on the world market. People say it's not, oh, we'll catch up. But I don't think we will. I think right now it's a world economy and we can't, you know, close our borders and say just us, just us, just us.
And kind of piggybacking on that, I just want to get your sense, generally speaking, of how you rate the health of the U.S. economy. And if elected, what would your priorities be to make it stronger?
The health of the U.S. economy, if you are just looking at the stock market, it's A-OK. You know, the rich are making their money. If you look at the general populace, the Americans in this country, a lot of them can barely afford to live. They have to choose between things that the wealthy just take for granted. You know, some of them have to choose for, okay, well, I can't afford a car and my medicine. Okay, so I have to get rid of the car. And this is happening a lot more frequent in this country than people think. Even though people are employed, if you're employed at $8.75 an hour, you have to have three people in your family working just to get by. And, you know, it's something that I think – I'm not saying raise the minimum wage. I am saying there's a lot of other things we can do in the economy to make things affordable for everybody. I do think the minimum wage is a bit low. As a small business owner, what I think people don't realize is that when somebody gets paid $15 an hour, it's really only 65% mm-hmm. of what it costs the business. So we kind of have to look at that, what they can afford. But I'm certain that there's a system we could sit down on with both sides of the aisle and figure out something, whether it's you know, subsidizing some housing or other things for people that are on this minimum wage. We try and do it now, but everybody argues about it. So let's just figure out a system to help these people, bring them up to you know, higher income level. And a great way to do that is subsidize college education. Because if you look at the long run, a college-educated person will earn a whole lot more. And guess what? They're going to pay a whole lot more taxes. Now our tax base goes up. And now it's a waterfall effect. I truly believe the whole trickle-down idea was exactly what George Bush Sr. said when he was debating Ronald Reagan. He said it's voodoo economics. And it is. You make the wealthy really wealthy, and everybody says it'll trickle down. It doesn't work that way. They buy jets. They buy, you know, they do stock buybacks when they promise other things just to make themselves bonuses.
And finally, is there an issue you feel that isn't getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle?
Campaign finance reform. It's the ticket. It's the thing that is – if you look at any problem we have in this country – you can narrow it down to the money. You know, basically, our Congress, Senate, and House of Representatives will make a law. This law kind of serves the very wealthy. The very wealthy take, you know, Medicare and Big Pharma, for instance. Big Pharma will take the money. It comes out of our tax coffers, you know, and then turn around and kick some of that back to the congressmen, senators, and House of Representatives. And it's this dirty cycle of them just scraping off the top of our taxes and then, you know, saying, oh, we don't have enough. We have to, you know, raise the debt ceiling when it really could be fixed if we were fiscally responsible in this country and we got the money, the campaign finance reform through. And it'll probably have to be a 28th Amendment because of Citizens United, which was a Supreme Court decision in 2010.
All right. Dimitri Theodoropoulos, Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate. Thank you for your time on Candidate Conversations.
Thank you very much.
And you can find all of our Candidate Conversations online at DelawarePublic.org and DelawareDebates.org. This Candidate Conversation was taped on location in Newark and is produced by Delaware Public Media as part of Delaware Debates 2018, part of our collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. Thanks for listening.